Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Well, there is more news out of Washington. President Donald Trump is expected to sign an executive order this week that would roll back President Obama's signature energy policy, the Clean Power Plan. Those are environmental regulations that would require a more than 30% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions from power plants by 2030. Here's how President Obama put it back in 2015.
Today, we're here to announce America's Clean Power Plan. A plan 2 years in the making, and the single most important step America has ever taken in the fight against global climate change.
Again, that was President Obama in 2015. Fast forward to this past Sunday, Scott Pruitt, the new EPA administrator, announced that the president's executive order, that's President Donald Trump's executive order, to kill the Clean Power Plan. He made that announcement on ABC's This Week.
We can be both pro-jobs and pro-environment, and the executive order is going to address the past administration's effort to kill jobs across this country through the Clean Power Plan.
Well, joining me now with some reaction is Gina McCarthy. She was the head of the EPA from 2013 to 2017 under President Obama. She's now a fellow at the Institute of Politics at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Gina McCarthy, welcome to Radio Boston.
I guess it's great to be here.
Well, you were the person in charge of the EPA when the Clean Power Plan was first, I can't even say put into effect, but finalized here. So we just heard from your successor, Scott Pruitt, there, that the administration is going to dismantle it. First of all, how quickly can the Clean Power Plan be undone?
Well, you can't undo it with a piece of paper like an executive order. It has to be a brand new rulemaking that establishes facts to support an outcome that's different than what we came to in the Clean Power Plan, which I think is based on science, on the law, huge amounts of engagement and outreach, and I think it provided the right answer for a clean energy future for this country.
Well, if it is ultimately dismantled, what would the consequences be?
Well, I think we first need to recognize that the clean energy train has left the station in the United States. We already see many states achieving standards under the Clean Power Plan that wouldn't have been required until 2022. So we have a significant opportunity here. And while it may represent a delay, I know what the law requires. It requires us to take care of carbon pollution and to reduce the health impacts associated with that. And I know that utilities are big sources. So I believe that we, in any case, will be moving forward towards renewable energy, energy efficiency. That's where the investments are. Unfortunately, you'll lose that long-term signal that that regulation could provide that will really spark continued investment and incentive and keep the U.S. in a leadership position. I cannot believe that this president, who is so bullish on America, wants to cede this whole area to another country to give them an opportunity for leadership when this is all about jobs and the economy, not just about keeping us safe and protecting national security and the health of and future of our kids. This is one big deal, Meghna, and to have him simply say, I'm taking a pass on this, it's like going back to a Back to the Future movie where Biff won. You know, I don't want to live in that world.
Well, but just to repeat what Scott Pruitt said in that cut we played in the beginning here, Pruitt and the Trump administration say that we can both be pro-jobs and pro-environment, and that it was the jobs part, the coal jobs killing part of the Clean Power Plan that they wanted to remedy.
Well, I mean, I can understand them wanting to have a variety of jobs available to people, and I certainly can understand that there's difficulties in West Virginia. But you don't blind yourself to the fact that it's the market itself which is the challenge for the coal country. We have inexpensive natural gas. The Clean Power Plan
and
wasn't—
President Obama went in whole hog on natural gas.
And natural gas being inexpensive is what has knocked coal out of the marketplace in most places. So we know that there are the market is leaning in the direction of clean energy. That's where the job growth is. If you look at solar jobs, they're escalating at 12 times the pace of the overall economy. The future isn't going to be looking back 40 or 50 years at what we used to do. It's going to be looking at the resources today and the future we need to create and how to take advantage of that.
So this is really, really important, Gina McCarthy, and I just want to dig into this a little bit more. Because, first of all, the Clean Power Plan is divided into into three parts, right? We mentioned the first part, an EPA regulation that would require a 30% overall reduction in greenhouse gas emissions from power plants by 2030. And many people expected that to lead to the closing of hundreds of coal-fired power plants. There's an additional requirement that power plants built in the future would produce about half the rate of pollution, right, now produced by current systems. And some people say that effectively assured that no new coal-fired power plants would be built in the United States. And the plan assigned every state a target for reducing its emissions and required the states to come up with draft plans to achieve those goals. Now, I was looking at some analysis back in 2015, around the time that the Clean Power Plan was finalized, and many people said when they looked at those three things together, they saw that the goal of the plan overall was to just end domestic demand for coal in the United States.
Yeah.
Is that a fair analysis?
No, it really isn't. This is a plan that's looking at where the energy market is heading today. And how do we underpin that with a regulatory structure that recognizes that climate change is a danger to human health and the environment, and that there are ways in which we need every state to step up and do their fair share to make sure that that danger is eliminated as we maintain a reliable and cost-effective energy system. So the end result we anticipated was not no coal or hundreds of facilities being closed. It, in fact, was following the exact direction that the energy system was heading and where energy investment is moving. We only expected it to move by a few percentages in terms of the difference of percent that coal would provide for the energy generation in 2030 versus where we are today.
Really? With a 30% reduction from 2005 levels?
You know why? It's because each state gets to take a look at what's available to them and do it the best way possible. And there are ways in which you can continue to burn coal and still make these reductions possible. We could have been tighter. We could have made it more difficult. But we simply wanted to send a signal that over the course of the following decades, we are facing a significant challenge with climate change. And if the U.S. wants to lead, if we want to be the ones to show that clean energy matters and invest in it, you need to send a long-term signal. So we did not go further than we thought we should based on reliability and affordability. In the end, you're going to have coal in the system, natural gas in the system, and you're going to have increasing amounts of renewables. And what the Energy Information Administration is showing, the most recent data shows that the Clean Power Plan isn't tying any state's hands. It's following where the investments are heading now, and only in the later years does it control those decisions more effectively.
So we're here at this point in time in terms of the Trump administration saying that it's going to kill the Clean Power Plan for a number of reasons.
Yes.
One is that very soon after the Clean Power Plan was finalized, some 28 states and lots of private companies sued the government, saying that they believe the EPA overreached. That process isn't complete yet.
That's right. It may
be moot now if the president's executive order does go through. So there was that. There's also this giant political divide, right? We have the climate-denying wing of the GOP. But thirdly, I feel like, and it's going to come back to this thing that Scott Pruitt said, we have a nation where it seems as if there's this divide between people thinking about, does it always have to be jobs versus the environment? Mm-hmm. Jobs versus the environment. And what I want to ask you is, in doing things like coming up with a climate plan, with coming up with the Clean Power Plan, did you and President Obama clearly articulate to the best of your ability to coal workers, for example, that, you know, we're going to possibly reduce the demand for coal, but here's what we're going to do next for you, right? Here's how we're going to bring you, coal miner in West Virginia, into the clean energy economy. Because I don't feel like you did. Otherwise, why would you be getting such powerful pushback
to the
Clean Power Plan and to President Obama's overall vision itself?
I don't think we should be naive and think it's happened in some natural way. I mean, there are clearly fossil fuel interests that are, pardon the pun, fueling this debate and this divide. But if you look at EPA, we've been around for 47 years. Look at the record. We didn't do anything different with this than we did with any rule. We thought about the jobs and the economy. We thought about the cost to consumers. We thought about the people who would be left behind. And so we didn't just do this rule with absolute sensitivity to its economic and job impacts, but the president also put a proposal on the table to significantly invest in coal country, in looking at how we could rebuild those areas. This decline in coal country didn't start with the Clean Power Plan. It started back in the 80s, Magna. They haven't been investing in new technologies on how to do this safely and cleanly. You're not going to hear owners of mining companies say that there is a future in coal right now. They recognize it. So I think this is very much a symbolic gesture that doesn't look at the history of how EPA operates and what we do, and the fact that climate change isn't separate from the core goals of protecting air and water that they also tout they have such an interest in.
Why do you think this message, everything that you just said, why do you, I would say there's a pretty significant argument for the fact that it wasn't heard loud and clear in coal country.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's very difficult in coal country right now. I can understand them wanting to do anything to rebuild their communities. But this isn't a case of any port in a storm, Magna. You've got to be thoughtful. It's leadership in government isn't about simply going where everybody wants you to go. It is about making the case. It's about looking at science, the law, and our authorities. We didn't do this rule other than we were told to do it by Congress. We followed the law. We followed the science. That does not mean you're blind to the implications of that, but you can't let those implications stop you from doing what you're required under the law to do. But what's most important is that people actually take that next step. What Congress decided was that in order to make the Clean Power Plan look really bad and boost the argument to coal country about how EPA is after coal, they decided not to provide the support that they could have provided to build up in the economy in those areas and find out what their next venture was.
Mm. You know, back in January of this year, we were looking at a Reuters story that quoted you, and you said that you told Reuters that one of your biggest regrets, or possibly biggest regrets, from your 4 years as being EPA administrator was not doing away with the EPA's reputation among some as a job killer.
Yeah. Well, it's a little bit frustrating because there's no data to show that we haven't been enormously successful here. And if you look at our rules, we always gain more in benefits than we spend in costs, to the tune of $9 for every $1 we spend. But the question is, who has all the money to defend these rules? Who actually can create the discussion on the table? And I think you see a lot in the fuel industry that recognizes that their time horizon is limited. And the question is, how limited is it? And this is a market issue, not about pollution. Their time window is limited because clean energy is evolving. Many companies recognize it. They're reducing their footprint. The U.S. can lead here. And this is an opportunity perhaps to buy a few more years. But at what expense?
So let me ask you more about that. I mean, you talked about you believe that President Trump might be ceding America's leadership position in terms of a clean energy future to other countries. What signal does it give to India, China, et cetera, that the United States could potentially be rolling back its greenhouse emission reduction goals? This is the key part of our contribution to the Paris Climate Accords.
Well, I think that we can certainly argue that our energy continues to transition so that reductions are happening. We're already reducing more as we reduced under the President Obama's term. We reduce more in our greenhouse gas emissions than any other developed country. So we're doing well at this point. And an executive order, again, doesn't eliminate a rule. Those rules still will be in place. What they've asked is to look at it. But I think it's a large hurdle to get from issuing an executive order to actually creating a new record on science and fact to base a differing rule. But what it is, frankly, it's kind of embarrassing. Because we're not just taking away rules. We have a president who's denying climate science, which virtually every other country in the world understands and is acting on. They expect the U.S. to be a leader. Mm. They want us there. We are one of the two biggest polluters in the world in terms of carbon pollution. We're supposed to not just be doing the Clean Power Plan, but doing our fair share. And that is nowhere near where we are today.
There's one more question I really want to ask.
Alrighty.
So the current administrator of the EPA, Scott Pruitt, was Attorney General of Oklahoma. And as Oklahoma AG, he was one of the AGs who led the lawsuits against the EPA and the Clean Power Plan. He's on the record as being, we looked at his own bio. Strangely, he has a LinkedIn page right now. Don't know why, but on his own LinkedIn page, he calls himself the leading advocate against the EPA's activist agenda. Scott Pruitt's own bio there. You met him once and called him polite when you met him. Honestly, how does it make you feel that Pruitt inherited your job as administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency?
Well, I think we were all prepared that there would be changes, as there normally is in a swing. But I think I'm very used to people taking that job who care about the mission of the agency and simply want to tweak it with different policy directions. And that, I understand, they have every right to do that. But what I didn't expect was that they would, you know, jump from one defeat to a terrible position to take. You know, the United States, we've seen recent work done by Yale that shows a map of what people think. 69% of the people in this country know climate is changing and actually want actions taken by EPA to reduce emissions from utilities. 69%. So I just don't understand why they can't embrace something that's been handed to them as a great opportunity to protect public health and grow the economy and to maintain the national security of this country. That's what's at stake.
Your equanimity is admirable because, I mean, what we're talking about is the undoing of years worth of work to get the United States even to this level. You're pretty balanced about
how
that makes you feel.
You know, I've been doing this work for a long time, and I think we did it well. And I'm interested in making sure that if we lose ground, that there's an opportunity to catch up. And I think what this administration hasn't understood is what EPA does, how we do it, how we don't pit the environment against the economy. In fact, that's my biggest frustration, is having to keep talking about that. Because there is no way in the world that I think we would want to live in this country the way we have lived in it and grown our economy if we didn't have clean water and clean air. That's what people expect. And if they threaten that with their policies and decisions, they will hear from the people who elected them.
Well, Gina McCarthy was the head of the Environmental Protection Agency from 2013 to 2017 under the Obama administration. She's currently a fellow at the Institute of Politics at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
You too. Thanks.
Back in a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.